much more surely then, now that we have been justified through their blood, will we be saved through them. What does Memorial Day mean to you? To most of us, I imagine it marks the beginning of the vacation season, when we begin to think about leaving our normal surroundings, either physically or figuratively, to finally kick back and relax, a mentality that has surely contributed to the attendance here this morning. The 21st century Memorial Day, for most of us then, has become a universal symbol of leisure. When we leave to go to barbecues, pool parties, and even sometimes to the beach. When we go shopping for discounts, to watch the Indy 500, though I can never understand why it's so boring. And even when some of us go out in search of a small town parade when overtaken by a spirit of commemoration. But really, how many of us do that? That is, how many of us spend the upcoming holiday in a spirit of commemoration? How many of us dedicate tomorrow's Monday to memorializing those who had served to give us a free day to be just that? Surely our ex-military and those intimately connected might be in the affirmative. But what of the lot of us? Do we take it as seriously anymore? Do we remember and realize Memorial Day's deeply rooted significance? If we're honest, probably not. But in our defense, the task for us has been made considerably harder since most of us have simply been uneducated about the very roots of Memorial Day. You see, Memorial Day wasn't always even called Memorial Day. Rather, it was originally known as Decoration Day, accordingly named as the graves of those who had perished were cleaned and decorated by those who had served adjacently in war. Originating in 1865, Decoration Day was founded by those bound by a common interest to pay sincere and serious respects to those who, baptized by blood, paved the road for the benefit of those who meant the future, for us, for the surviving. As you can probably discern, then, Decoration Day was not a holiday that was taken lightly, nor was it the holiday that we now know it to be, a day where vacation happens for those of us who don't have to work. Decoration Day was a day of service, a devout, long day of service, bearing witness to both God and to those who had fallen. And the amazing thing, too, was that all people came together to celebrate it. No matter the religion, no matter your economic class, no matter even your siding in arms. And for one day, May 30th, a day for which there was no anniversary of a battle, there was no anniversary of a battle on May 30th. Everyone came together to pay their respects to those who laid 6 feet beneath them. So what happened then? How did something as serious as Decoration Day become the Memorial Day that we now celebrate in swim trunks? Well, was that which frequently comes with the passing of time? Detachment gave way to complacency. And also, in 1968, history lesson my father will enjoy, Congress passed the Uniform Holidays Bill, which declared that Decoration veterans of foreign wars. Warned in a statement in 2002, saying that changing the date of Memorial Day merely to create a three-day weekend has undermined the very meaning of the day. No doubt, this has contributed to the lot of the general public's nonchalant observance of Memorial Day as we now know it. And I think they were right in saying such. I mean, what would happen if some future generation, 100 years from now, 200, 300, that was gravely detached from where we are now, declared that something like July 4th was to be moved to whatever Monday fell first on the calendar in July, such to make it easier for work schedules and holiday plans? That would water it down, wouldn't it? And there would be an outcry, wouldn't there? No, July 4th, just the first Monday. You can just imagine our national elders, and indeed many of you, vigorously protesting the move, just like the VFW did with the Memorial Day switch. But what if, over time, in the elders' weakening ages of importance and societal presence, what if their figurative voices died out with the literal drying of their bones, such that no one listened to them, and that the government declared that July 4th will now be July 2nd or July 1st? Would we then, as a society, much like we do now for Memorial Day, greet one another and say, "Happy July 2nd! Happy July 1st. Harrowingly, the history of Decoration Day tells us that yes, we would. And that distant generations would go on celebrating it, and without question. And in doing so, they would become slowly disengaged from observing its true and intended significance. And all of this, my friends, Memorial Day, Decoration Day, the hypothetical Independence Day, all of this is just a daunting metaphor for what is happening to the church. The church, even perhaps this one, is like Ezekiel's dry bones in the valley, sustained by a time and a people, the pillars of our church, whose vision couldn't be any more different than the present generation's vision. Dedication, observance, and commitment to church have been replaced by whatever is tepid, convenient, and unchallenging to one another's priorities. Church has lost its significance and finds itself competing with entities and events that can hardly be considered life-giving or as much. And it is such a sad thing, isn't it? Now, I am not blind nor old enough to realize and to forget that the stress and the pressures of this age and our presently hyper-driven culture are quite different than the ages of past. Though clearly not apparent, I can absolutely sympathize with how difficult it must be to craft an adequate schedule, well-balanced and beneficial to both maturation and growth, to our families and to our youth. In fact, more than sympathize, I can barely imagine how anyone parents today. And that's the truth. I can't imagine how difficult it must be. Just 15 years ago, a quick story about myself. Just 15 years ago, I lettered into high school. high school sports. Just 15 years ago, Rod was playing football and baseball for my high school. I never had a conflict on a Sunday morning because it didn't exist. Coaches didn't schedule it like such. Maybe once, twice, or thrice, the great word, a year, we would miss church. But rarely because sports fell on a Sunday. It just never happened. It was simply unheard of for any of us to have something else on the calendar that wasn't Sunday morning worship at 10 or 11, 15 a.m. So even just 15 years ago, just 15 years ago, it was easier to be a youth and go to church. It was easier to be a young parent and to go to church. It was easier for families to come walking through the narthex and go to church. And that is the truth. I am aware of it. And even as Jesus exclaimed in that fantastic parable, you cannot force old wineskins into the new. We simply can't go back to 60 years ago, to 50 years ago, even to 15 years ago, to the way things were. The age is simply too incompatible, and frankly, it probably also wouldn't work. I can't stand here, nor can Cindy, or nor can Matt, or any of us, and preach force that you must come through these doors. You must, otherwise hell awaits you. We can't do that. It's disingenuous anyway. It wouldn't force our children, our youth, our young, it wouldn't work if we forced our children, our youth, our young families, or even our older ones to come through these doors every Sunday morning, giving up everything else that they do, enjoy, and cherish, and are obligated now to. In fact, if we were to force them, it is my contention that that would make them, and especially our kids, antagonistic towards this place. As they say, you're taking baseball away because of church? I don't want to then go to church, and I hate church. Between a rock and a hard place. And yet, do we just let the change in the times dictate how and when we are to observe this holy day? Are we to sit idly by, watching complacently as the cycle evolves itself completely, such that Sunday becomes the new decoration day, just as forgotten? Shall we not unite in voice and number, even standing by our neighbors of differing congregations and denominations, and say no more to this pattern, no more to the coaches, no more to that which takes us away from church on Sunday morning? Shall we not unite? Because, my friends, it is true. It is true that we indeed are in the first, if not the middle, stages of crisis. The pillars of this church state of television. From something that was once informative to something in his time, as he was noticing it, becoming increasingly more watered down. And today, his speech about 50 years ago speaks to us in the form of a jarring parable, transparent through time and mirroring all too exactly our present situation in church here today. Listen to it then as I read it, with deep consternation. And when you hear the term, the instrument, which in the context of the quote is a television set, mentally substitute it in your minds with a visual of a church. This church. I quote, "History will be what we made it." To those who say people wouldn't look, they wouldn't be interested, they're too complacent, indifferent, and insulated, I can only reply, there is, in one reporter's opinion, considerable evidence against that contention. But if they are right, and this instrument is good for nothing but to entertain, amuse, and insulate, then the tube is flickering now, and we will soon see that the whole struggle is lost. This instrument, church, can teach, it can illuminate, yes, and it can even inspire. But it can do so only to the extent that humans are determined to use it to those ends. Otherwise,